Welcome to part two of our conversation with Matthew Sorge. Tell me the history of the Nickerson Snead House.
So the Nickerson Snead House is located in Glade Spring, Virginia. In 1770s, Francis Kincannon owned the property. He turned the property or fortified the property because at that point in time, Tennessee and Virginia really weren't completely, you know, Virginia was a state, but Tennessee wasn't. Tennessee was actually part of North Carolina at this point in time. So the boundaries were very different, and the frontier land at that point in time extended pretty much into what is modern day, you know, Southwest Virginia and East Tennessee. So a lot of areas as you spread that way further west were heavily fortified because of, you know, the Native Americans and the Indians. That was areas that weren't really populated by a lot of people, so they were more fortifications. So he fortified it, and it was known as Kincannon's Fort. And actually, during the Battle of Kings Mountain in the Revolutionary War, those soldiers that were on their way to Kings Mountain, South Carolina, actually stayed a period of time at the fort. So there was almost 400 soldiers that camped on that almost 900 acres right there in and around where the house sits today. The original log cabin structure that existed, the main room, one of the main rooms was kept. In 1835, Dr. Nickerson Snead built the house that sits there today. He actually, some of the bricks were built on site. The site, the house was built that sits there today by him and his wife, Betsy Snead. Betsy came from a very prominent family that owned most of the Glade Springs area. And when Dr. Snead married Betsy, of course, in those days, you inherited all of your wife's assets. So they basically became his. He was also on the first board of directors for Emory and Henry College, the nearby college just outside of there. And through the 1850s, he was very prominent in Glade Springs society. He was handpicked by the governor to serve on the trying to get the railroad to come through Virginia and what became Tennessee, trying to get the Tennessee-Virginia Railroad or whatever it was called, that rail line that ran through there. He was instrumental in getting the rail brought there and a rail depot brought to Glade Spring. He was also the first postmaster of Glade Spring. And then when he passed away, he did not want his wife. He was pretty much a mean guy too. He didn't want his wife to inherit the property. So he said if she ever were to remarry, she would get nothing but a single dollar, from his will. So he basically left her a widower and left her with the house. Let me back up real quick. During that period of time that he was also the town physician, the Civil War broke out in this country, and Saltville, Virginia is very close to Glade Spring. There was a Civil War battle there. The battle erupted, and there were casualties. Him being the local town doctor, some of those casualties were taken to the Nickerson Snead, and the bodies were actually of the soldiers that did not survive were stored in the basement of the house that's there today, from the war until those bodies could be moved on. So it was a temporary Civil War hospital and a makeshift morgue as well. And then after his family owned it, the Mason family owned it. They had one child. Her name was Josephine. She passed away around age 11 from illness. A year later, her younger brother, Douglas Mason, was struck in the head by a horse on the property, and he passed away inside the house as well. So Civil War soldiers, Dr. Snead, we've had, you know, several groups, not just ours, paranormal teams from all over the country have come through there, and we've all documented the same voice on EVP and Spirit Box that we believe is Dr. Snead, as well as stuff with the children. So it's an incredible location.
What was it like the first time you went into the house yourself? What was your first encounters in that building?
So my very first experiences in the Nickerson Snead was when I went there to meet Rhonda. Did not know her at this point. We were coming up to the investigation. In fact, we'd reached out and said, hey, we'd like to come up and check out your property. She really hadn't opened the house up for a lot of that kind of stuff at the time, but she is a psychic medium her whole life. And she invited us to, you know, come in and do an investigation. So we did like we always do. We met with her and did an interview to find out what type of claims there were and kind of get a tour of the house. Well, while we were sitting in what was one of the original rooms of the Kincannon property, when it was a log cabin, we were sitting in what used to be the dining area. Having a conversation, clearly heard what sounded like bootsteps going across the roof above us. So I asked her, was there anybody else in the house? And she said, no, it's just us, but this happens all the time. So I had a recorder in my hand and I immediately took off up the stairs and I said hello, trying to see if anybody would respond. I opened the door and I hear these footsteps still again audibly. I open the door and I follow them into the room and there's nobody there. And when I got back and reviewed the audio, we actually caught a Class A EVP of a female, and you can clearly hear her say, come on, come on. As in follow me, like, come on, come on. Mm-hmm. So that was the first experience, and that was during the walkthrough for the house.
Pretty immediate.
Yes.
Wow. So, I mean, immediately you have this experience. Now, over time, obviously, you've been there for a while. Tell me more about some of the experiences, the ones that stand out to you more than anything that you go, that was pretty amazing.
There's another great example of photographic evidence, and all this stuff is available on our website that people can go look at for themselves. I always encourage people to make their own, you know, their own assessments of what people present as evidence. But, you know, one of the things I did early on in investigating, or is actually during that first investigation, and we always do this. We take a series of photos of the exterior of a place and the interior. And part of that is so that we can, and when we hear things or see things or we're doing stuff on video, we can go back and look at those photos in the daylight, you know, when we shot them in daylight in good light, and make sure that something we're seeing may not give us that reasonable explanation, right? So maybe it's something the way that this wall sits that casts this shadow that at night we don't notice it, but when a camera light hits it, it creates this illusion over here. Well, by having those daytime photos to go back, if we can't go back to the location especially, you can cross-reference that and say, hey, look, yeah, this is definitely what's causing that, to debunk whatever it is. So we had taken a series of these photos. So it took over 200 photos of the exterior of the house. And one photo, I captured this shadow figure looking thing, a little short person, kind of like a little boy, kind of peeking out the window. And it's not in a frame before, it's not in a frame after. Had photo analysis experts, including one on our team who actually did some works for TAPS. She analyzed the photo pixel by pixel. It's definitely nothing in there casting a shadow. It's definitely, you know, not an explainable photo. We debunked it. We put an investigator in there, tried to get the same shadow effect, couldn't get him close enough to the window. Plus all the large stuff that was in front of the window blocking it made it completely impossible. So that's something that stands out, because I have taken photos at every investigation I've done since then, and I've got maybe one other photo or two other photos I haven't completely thrown out or couldn't explain. That's unexplainable. Some of the best full sentence, same voice, spirit box responses, asking Dr. Sneed questions and get a spirit box. I'm not talking a yes or a simple one word. I'm talking full sentence. I can hear you is a great example. One of our researchers says, can you hear me? And you clearly hear the response immediately back on the spirit box in the same voice we've got EVPs of, in the same voice we've gotten in numerous educations, say, I can hear you. So that to me is, you know, very, very amazing when you can document changes in the environment in the room, because we've got meters that are picking that stuff up. You can pick up a voice that is obviously not coming from a radio snippet, and it matches other samples that you have from EVP, and, you know, you're experiencing that in real time. There's nothing like it. And that place is fantastic for that, those type of experiences.
Do you think it's more likely for a soul to haunt a location if they had a storied life or accomplished life, or accomplished in whatever way you want to look at it, whether it be good or bad, but a long kind of history to it, then maybe a notable life would be the correct term, where around the area people know the history. Obviously, in this house, there's that man who certainly had one. Is it more likely for someone like that to be a spirit versus, you know, Joe, who really, you know, didn't do a whole lot in his life as far as notable things to the rest of the world?
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of those questions that I've asked myself too, because it does seem like, I think it depends on why. I think we have to look at why sometimes spirits haunt places. Sometimes maybe it's because of a connection to the place. In Dr. Sneed's case, I believe that he built that place. It was important to him. He was, you know, he went from kind of being just an average Joe to marrying into wealth and became something of prominence. So maybe the idea of, leaving all that was more than he could bear. So maybe that's why he stays. I think in another case that we had, the T.B. Rippey Mansion in Kentucky, which, if you've ever heard of Wild Turkey whiskey or bourbon, Kentucky bourbon, that is the same family. So the T.B. Rippey line is what becomes, later on those particular whiskey lines. So it was one of the early whiskey barons. The activity that we had there certainly indicated to us that our sense, our psychic impression, plus our sense of the evidence we captured, led us to feel that, maybe T.B. Rippey still roams those halls, because that was his legacy. It wasn't necessarily his whiskey, but it was what he built. This, sure. 50-some room mansion that's 15,000 square feet, that was his legacy. And in the time that he built that in 1888, it would have been, something very uncommon, especially in the South, to be the size and scale and scope that it was. So sometimes I think, yes, I think it's maybe their prominence. Maybe they just don't want to, maybe they don't want to face that, so they stay. Other times I think maybe it's because they just truly love to come back. I think that's what keeps me coming back. What keeps me researching the paranormal is the unknown. We don't know why. We don't know why. And it seems like the more I try to get answers, the more questions and theories I have. I have more questions and theories now than I did, 15 years ago when I started this journey.
Yes.
Some of the stuff I thought was definitely one way is not that way. And other stuff I think is this way turns out to be the way I thought it wasn't, So it's, I think that's what keeps us coming back, right?
I completely agree with that. That's something people will, reach out and say, well, you must be an expert in this or that. It's like, I have more questions today than I did the day I started doing these shows. It's like, I'm more informed than I was before, but nobody's an expert. It's like,
Thank you. I totally agree. There are no experts. No. There's just some of us that are just really addicted to this stuff. So yeah. If anything, we have an addiction to paranormal.
Exactly. It's like, if I have more stories to tell just because I've heard them, but it doesn't make me an expert. I guess I'm just a better resource than I was previously. Do spirits, and this is just an opinion-based question, like we're talking there about a prominent individual. How much of that, though, do you think is us, the living, going, well, I don't really know many of the other people who would have come and gone through this because they weren't documented, so of course I'm going to latch on to the few that are documented through this time. But do you think sometimes spirits will take on the persona of someone else? Just because the living is requesting to communicate with them, maybe that individual is gone. They're not haunting it anymore. But Bill, who worked out in the stables, is still hanging around, and he'll answer your questions. Do you want him to be Mr. Sneed today? Sure, he'll be Mr. Sneed today. How often do you think that happens?
I absolutely think that happens. And I think that's why we'll never know, right? Until we actually someday can say, oh, hey, this is Casper. I've got Casper. Here Casper is in my controlled lab, and we've studied Casper. We're never going to be able. That's why I guess I kind of cringe. I know everybody loves to say, scientific. I don't love the term scientific. I like methodical. I think we should be methodical in our approach. I think we should have a definite, scientific approach in terms of the mythology, but to claim science is really hard because it's pseudo at best, in my opinion. So since this is an opinion-based question, I think I can really give an opinion here.
Yeah.
I think, yes, it has been my experience that we have had somebody come across on a EVP or a spirit box session, and they say they're somebody, but we know they definitely shouldn't be because there's no logical reason. So now, can spirits possibly travel wherever they want? Yes, I do believe spirits can travel, but I also have had spirits claim or say something, or even what psychics will say, this, I had psychic mediums, they're actually real credible mediums, say, this person is trying to tell you they're this person, but they're not. There's something else masquerading as this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that definitely is something that you have to be cautious of when you're investigating. Because, yeah, I think that definitely does happen. A good example of that would be, we were filming a documentary this past March. It'll be coming out hopefully this fall or early winter. Randolph County Asylum in Winchester, Indiana. Mm-hmm. We were working with a couple of very credible mediums on our team. We'd brought in medium Sky Ray and Pat O'Keefe and a few others. We were doing a series of experiments. We also had J.W. Prather. He builds equipment, IDC devices. You've seen his devices on, you know, Ghost Adventures and Haunted Towns and several others. The Ray Chasers, a bunch of those guys use a lot of his equipment. And he actually was there with us. So we wired up the whole 58,000 square foot of this asylum for real-time EVP and spirit box sessions for that type of communication. And we did experiments on a scope and scale that many people probably have never seen before. And in our walkthroughs, psychic walkthroughs, and trying to feel different things out, we had a few strange interactions that you immediately go, well, that doesn't make sense, because that's not right. This is a male voice, but it's telling us it's this female person, and it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great example of where we had some things that were familiar but should not have been there, and I don't believe that they were. So so yeah, I think, I don't know if I answered that. I feel like I kind of got lost in the weeds, but short answer is yes. I think sometimes they certainly do mislead us with information.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Matthew Swords here on The Grave Talks. A big thank you to him for sharing his experiences with us today. And thank you to you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.